Baseball's back.
Yeah. Palm Beach. The park's at Palm Beach.
We're here at Community Newspapers.
We are. The hub of Marlins baseball news.
Yeah. And we're here in the Mainline Marlins studio.
Official studio.
And an important article was published in the
I did see that. Was that ghostwritten? Or was it because I didn't see any attribution.
Special, man, okay. About the new, you know, us covering the team.
That's it.
Getting everyone pumped. All the pertinent details down to Picayune rules changes.
Yep. Yeah,
we're gonna see some. We may see a 5-inning game on Sunday.
I doubt that, but I think it's gonna be.
We may see some the defensive manager after 20 pitches calling innings.
Yep.
You know, some little changes, and it's interesting because one of the reason for this is there is no minor league camp, right?
Right. They're trying. Well, they're gonna have a mini camp. It's just gonna start once the regular season starts.
But the point being that like a lot of these changes are back in. You know, one of the reasons it was fun to go is you'd see all these guys. You know, with the number 90 and no name on their back of their jerseys, they'd come in for that cleanup stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not there. There's not as many guys here because of the COVID stuff. So a lot of these rules changes are to implement that. But it's interesting because I would be curious to see at the stadium when, you know, when they the announcer better do a good job of announcing, like, why when there's one out and bases loaded, is everyone just walking off the field?
Right. Right. There are no ties in baseball. That actually happened. I was at that All-Star game. I want to say it was 94 in Pittsburgh where Bud Selig called that a tie and that was it.
Yeah.
That was one of the worst. That was one of the worst commissioners of baseball of all time. Probably my most hated commissioner.
It's so funny too. Cause like that's, we were talking about the most exciting play in baseball. And I got to tell you, it's not the most exciting play, but one of the most interesting thing is when the team runs out of pitchers.
Yeah, and then the catcher comes in and backup catcher pitches.
I love the backup pitcher comes in. I mean, the backup catcher comes in, and he's got some goofy delivery. And I love that. I love two things about it. One is I love the announcers always have the stats somehow, right?
Right.
His last game pitch was 11th grade at Salisbury High in Pennsylvania, you know, where
right.
he got shellacked and gave up 12 hits.
Right. He hasn't pitched since he was a sophomore in high school.
And I hate to say it, it's like watching a NASCAR. You're just waiting for his like forearm to separate from his elbow, you know?
Right, right.
And the other thing that happens is it's also interesting to see the batter struggle.
Yeah.
Because they've never seen the guy throw. He's throwing weird. The speeds are all off. And it is funny to see these major league batters adjusting to what's happening because they've never seen this guy before.
Right.
So we're not going to see much of that this
week. No. In fact, let's talk about that game for a second because Daniel Castano is going to start, but then I saw where Nick Neidert's going to pitch two innings also. So two innings from Castano, two innings from Neidert on Sunday. And then the guy that they're starting, Houston is starting, is Brandon Belak. Played at Notre Dame. He played in six games last year. He got pummeled. 6.7 ERA, gave up 9 bombs in 6 games. Yeah. So,
they dialed him
but he's still there. How is he still in camp? But yeah, 6.75 in 6 games, gave up 9 jacks.
It's like back to the drawing board on what, like, what are you doing?
Well, maybe he retooled.
What's happening with your fastball that these guys are just lining
it's
it up?
It's a meatball right down the middle. Here it is. Pitch. Yeah. Just like the pitching machine. Here you go. So we're waiting for Christina DiNicola from MLB, the new Marlins beat writer that took over for Joe Fusaro. And then I just got an email from her a little bit ago, like about 1:20, saying that she was still waiting to be able to speak to the players and that she'd hope it wouldn't take long. This is try number 2 for Christina. So
we're going to make it happen.
Worst case scenario, we might run into her at Palm Beach.
Yeah, we're going to be up there. Figure as it said in the article, we're going to be there. From opening pitch to the last out, whether that's 5 innings or 7 innings.
Right. Well, I'm talking about to the last out in October.
Yeah, man.
That's what I'm talking about. So, yeah. And the weather's supposed to be, what, 85, 86 degrees, sunny? I'm kind of interested to see, because I think they're not going to – are they going to have the beer hawkers to come and bring – So you got to go get your beer.
No, that's interesting. I would think that they could, but how are they getting, you know, they can take payment wireless, maybe.
Well, no, they could have a little swiper, you know.
No, there's no reason that we couldn't that they can't pull it off. So maybe that's, you know, they
right. But maybe there's like the touching of it with other people.
I know for a fact that at the Canes games, I went to one Canes game, and like, for example, they had Ibis, they had Sebastian like in a cage. Like Sebastian couldn't move. He had to stay in this one section.
Sebastian was caged.
His feathers infecting.
There had to be PETA people out there raising hell.
No, he wasn't really in a cage, but he had to stay in the section. You could tell. Yeah. And they'd highlight him, you know, but he couldn't move around.
Oh, right, right.
I don't think we're going to see Orbit hugging kids and kissing.
No, 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 that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
But he's probably definitely not going to come near us because we're going to be all 100% in Marlins gear.
You know, it's interesting. The article I talked about, did you know the history of the name of the Grapefruit League?
I did not.
So the breakdown of really what happened was there, some people say that Casey Stengel Casey Stengel threw a grapefruit at the Brooklyn Dodgers, Robinson, the manager Robinson. Mm-hmm. But they say that's not what happened. What happened was they were going to do a first, imagine this, first pitch. It was in Daytona Beach.
Okay.
They were doing the first pitch of spring training. It was a female pilot, and she was going to drop a baseball.
Ooh, that's dangerous.
From a plane.
Could kill somebody.
So of course they don't know why. There's no explanation for why. But instead of a baseball, it was a grapefruit
from like 10,000 feet, or like that's still going to kill somebody.
So they dropped the grapefruit, and the way the story goes is he misses the grapefruit because you can imagine how it's coming. Like a plane is coming fast.
Yeah.
Like I, you know, think about the terminal velocity of that grapefruit.
It must 120 be, miles per hour.
Falling.
That's what terminal velocity.
Well, it's falling and then it's moving towards.
Yeah, and then you got wind.
And he misses it. Apparently, it strikes him in the chest.
Yeah.
And he falls to the ground. And of course, he thinks he's like killed because he's covered in shards of grapefruit flesh.
Right, right, right. Somebody shot me. What's this smell?
What's this all over me? What's all this wet stuff all over me?
Yeah.
So that's the origin. And so it's interesting because I, you know, in the article, I thought I did a good job of catching kind of the, why is spring training different?
Yeah.
It's a new beginning. It's spring. We're coming out of winter in many of locations.
Right. And you get to see some guys that you might not get to see normally.
Yep.
And you get to see some prospects and hear, you know, that you've heard about, watched on MLB.com or on MLB channel, but you haven't never seen them in real life.
Yeah. And that's why I like to go, because you go, you see some guys on the edge. I know, I just pay attention to teams more. Like I'll go, I love going to the Tiger Town. That's one of my favorites. I'm not a Mets fan. Mike Grabkowski, who we're going to go to the game with, is a huge Mets fan. And so I go to a lot of Mets games with them, but I love Port St. Lucie. I love like Little Shea or whatever they call it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a fun place. You get a Knish, you know, you get your Knishes, you get your, it's, I love that, you know, and I always say it's also, we get a little bit of it here because of Canes baseball, but
right.
Like to me, I'll take my daughter down, you know, last time we went, she was 6 years old, and you go by that fence and you hear that ball.
Yeah.
The sizzle of the seams. You know, and it's funny seeing her little
sound.
Face, you know, do it. And we had a great incident. We were at not a spring training game, but you know how they do that exhibition game?
Yeah, yeah.
We were in Houston and they were doing an exhibition game. And a catcher was in the bullpen, and one of the pitchers or one of the coach, I can't remember if it was a coach or a pitcher, but he's throwing one hoppers to the catcher. And the catcher's not trying to catch it. He has a glove, but he's just trying to keep it in front of him, right? He's just doing his moves.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there talking to my daughter who plays baseball. I'm like, hey, look what he's doing. Like he's keeping the ball in front of him. Like he's not scared of the ball.
Right.
And I can't remember the catcher's name was. I remembered it for a long time, but it was the coolest moment that I've had in a long time in baseball. And the catcher comes over and he goes, is that your daughter? I'm like, yeah. And he goes, what's your name? And my, you know, 6-year-old daughter says, Christina. And he goes, Christina, I want, you know, your dad's right, but I do want to tell you, I'm still a little scared of the ball. And he threw her.
Yeah, because when it's really coming, it's coming at 98.
Exactly.
Smoke.
No, that guy is not afraid of the ball, but he was making my daughter feel good. But he threw a ball up to my daughter. We still have that.
Oh, cool.
Those moments up close, like, you know, it's funny how it makes an impact on people.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, to see my daughter's face at 6 years old, and here's this, like, you know, handsome professional athlete paying attention to us, interacting with us.
Right.
Like that's how people fall in love with the game, frankly.
Right, right. And I remember, I mean, even up until I was in high school, would take a glove to the game.
No, my daughter, takes a glove. Yeah. She's not coming.
Now I'm a man. I can barehand it. I'll catch it barehanded. Or I'll use my beer cup. I've seen that done before.
Center fielder for the Marlins,
Starling
Marte. I was there. We were talking earlier. My daughter and Matilda, who we were talking about earlier, two little
boys. Oh, yeah, yeah.
We would sit outside, and you know, so there's not much of a center field anymore in Marlins Stadium, but there's that one little area that has like a balcony. For some reason, we got in there. Like there was no one there like watching it. We sat there, and the girls were yelling at him between every inning, you know, after he warmed up, throw us the ball, throw us the ball, throw us the ball.
Right. Did they try in Spanish?
Luckily, there's not enough. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Luckily, there's not enough fans that like he could hear them. And I swear this is a true story. He turns around. He goes like this.
Mm-hmm.
The girls are there. I see him and I'm like, yeah, yeah, like throw it. And he throws it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know,
knocks one of the kids out.
You know, I had to catch it. So it goes, and I have to say, it was an embarrassing moment.
Oh, we got her.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Christina.
Can you hear me?
How are you?
Good.
Hey, thanks for coming on. I know it's super hectic up there.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Well, yeah, Tommy Stitt and David Winker with the Mainline Marlins podcast. First off, I just want to say congratulations for the promotion to beat writer at MLB.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm in between interviews right now. I didn't want to for a second time.
Don't worry. We'll make it quick. I promise.
No,
worries. Yeah.
Awesome.
So go ahead, David.
Wait, how's the week gone? How are things going up there?
So I guess the big thing to take away so far is everyone's excited, wants to build off of the success of 2020, but also get a good idea of what these young prospects can do in 2021 and moving forward. So the big word has been progress. And that's, I guess, what we've gradually seen since Derek Jeter and Bruce Sherman took over for the ownership.
Right. Do you have a feeling about that competition at second between Jazz and Esan Diaz, how that's going? I read your article. It was awesome, by the way.
Thank you. Yeah, I thought the best way to kind of detail the second base battle was sort of give a side-by-side comparison. And let, I guess, their words yesterday spoke to us speak for themselves. So, obviously, Esan Diaz is supposed to be the one considered the second baseman of the future, and Jazz Chisholm, the shortstop of the future. Naturally, Miguel Rojas is in short right now, but those two will be, you know, the front runners. John Birdie is more of a utility player, but this is, you know, Esan's chance to, you know, prove that, you know, he was one of those top prospects in the Christian Yelich trade, that he can take over that spot. You know, last year was a bit of a wash for him. He, you know, elected to opt out when the outbreak happened. Don't blame him. But then he returned, and then Strange is growing. So he had 7 games under his belt. And before that, he had, 40-something as a rookie in 2019. So he really needs to try to win this job and prove that he is that second baseman of the future that they expected.
Right. So we did a show yesterday about J.J. Bleda and Peyton Burdick.
Mm-hmm.
And I think with the addition of Adam Duvall, I don't know that they're going to have a chance to play unless their injuries or, you know, one of these guys hits a slump or whatever, and they just want to, you know, revitalize the lineup. How do those guys look? What is the vibe around, you know, the guys in the outfield?
Well, so obviously the starting pitching, everyone knows, is very young and inexperienced. And on the other hand, you've got the outfield is a bunch of veterans. You've got Starling Marte, Corey Dickerson, and now Adam Duvall, who I think in my story the other day have 34 years of big league experience, something like that, or 24, between them, gold gloves, all-stars. So it'll be those three. But then, of course, Dickerson and Marte can become free agents at the end of the year. So, you know, depending on how the season goes, maybe they can get flipped at the trade deadline. Duvall has, I believe, a mutual option. So he technically could, you know, at the end of the season. So at some point, I would expect those top prospects, Monte Harrison, Jesus Sanchez, who debuted last year, to be up. For J.J. Bleda, I think yesterday we asked Mattingly about that, and he said he wouldn't be surprised maybe by the end of the year, 2021, Bleda could. But, you know, part of the issue is those guys were at the alternate training site last year. They lost out on a minor league year of development. So they haven't played in, you know, true games since 2019. I would say Blade is ahead of Burdick in terms of just, he would seem like the quicker riser, especially as, you know, such a high draft pick at the time.
Right.
But they Blade was out there today taking BP with a lot of, I think, the regulars. But they've been switching out, you know, like in and out people, like whether it's the prospects with each other or some of them with the veterans, just to get, you know, everyone feed off of each other and learn from each other.
Yeah, right on. So
I got a question, Christina.
Go ahead.
So we put out an article yesterday, kind of just a preview of the season and what was going on. And in going back over the season last year, you know, it was to relive that kind of like how the Marlins shocked. I mean, the people use that term lightly, but shocked the world. I mean, I don't think it was shocking. What do you think about pundits, you know, looking, you know, basically putting the Marlins back in the bottom feeding category this year?
Well, it's an interesting year, not just for the Marlins, but for everyone around the league, because, you know, 60-game season is, you know, a small sample size in a 162. I think the biggest thing for the Marlins that probably – maybe it's the reason why guys are putting them pundits at the end of the division is just they're inexperienced. Like the starting pitching, you could probably put up there with most rotations in the majors, but the problem is they don't have enough innings of experience. So by the time August rolls around, what's going to happen when Sixto Sanchez or a Trevor Rogers or someone runs out of innings? You know, that's, are they going to try to do a six-man rotation? How are they going to hold up? And, you know, I guess a lot is said, of course, too, of the hot stove splashy signings or trades that, you know, the New York Mets made or, you know, the Atlanta Braves bringing back Ozuna. Of course, they're the gold standard of the division. You know, the Nationals acquired some guys. So, I mean, it's nothing new for the Marlins to be considered bottom feeders or to be considered underdogs. So that's actually one of the things Miguel Rojas said, I think on the first day of camp, was like the why not us mentality, bottom feeders mentality again. Let people keep saying that and we'll prove them wrong.
Right.
That's not a bad attitude to have coming out of spring training.
Yeah.
If that works, you know, it worked last year.
Right. Do you think that's bulletin board material, or do those guys just, they don't care about that and it's just business as usual? We got to go play the games and then we'll prove it at the end.
I think it's a mix, honestly, because when Mattingly spoke to us, I think for the first time this spring, he even brought up that like everyone's picking us last except Christina. I saw you put us fourth. So
go,
they're either reading it like a headline, or they know what's going on. They know what people are saying. So, you know, whether they use it as motivation or they just laugh it off, you know, everyone's always watching or knows what's going on.
And I think, Christina, it's interesting you say it, because it's, you know, we've been watching what's happening in Atlanta. You got to watch what's happening at the Mets. And did they get better than we got better? And I think there's some arguments that Atlanta might have gotten better in the offseason than we did.
Right. But you also, I guess, something that gets lost in the whole conversation is the Marlins are a lot younger than these other teams. Like the Mets have a bunch of guys arbitration eligible, quite a few key guys that are going to be free agents at the end of the year. They need to capitalize on that now. They need to take advantage of DeGrom's, you know, literally being the best pitcher on the planet every year. The Braves obviously are younger still, and they've got their guys locked up for a bit in terms of contracts. But yeah, like that's part of the thing too, is the Marlins are so much younger, especially when you see on the pitching side. So it's like, are you going to go all in and mortgage the farm that you've been spending the past couple of years trying to nurture and grow for, you know, the possibility that, you know, there's so many factors that can come into play. Like COVID could happen again, you know, an outbreak, or, you know, the pitchers don't, obviously, like I said, they'll have innings limits or restrictions at some point. So how realistic is it to go all in like the Padres are, or the White Sox, or the Blue Jays, when they're a little bit further along in their build than the Marlins? You know, they're still relatively, they're almost in that in-between stage. I think next offseason will be the big one for them, where they need to make those splashy moves after they've got an idea with these prospects, what they can do, especially the position player ones.
Well, we're on team Christina with you. Can I ask one other question?
Yeah, go ahead. And then I got one final
one. Yeah, one final one. We'll wrap it up. It's, what should we look for on Sunday? We're coming out for our first game. What should a fan be watching for? What's an interesting story on Sunday?
Well, right off the bat, the two pitchers that are going to piggyback off each other, Daniel Castano, obviously we saw a bit last year, who who surprised many, was part of that Ozuna trade with the Cardinals. He will get the start. He'll go two innings, and then following him will be Nick Neidert, another option for the rotation, who is one of the, I think, top 11 prospect for Marlins MLB pipeline. He was one of the guys that got COVID, and then he was kind of out of the bullpen. I would see him as of now as the front runner maybe for the fifth spot, but those are two guys, you know, that are competing. A lot of young arms trying to make a name for themselves. And then we'll kind of have an idea of what sort of combination of regulars will be out there for position players. But the big thing is definitely those two pitchers. They'll be both go two innings, and it's a seven-inning game.
Right. Hey, so we talked about the competition at second base at the beginning, but there's also a competition behind the plate between Alfaro and Chad Wallach, and then also Sandy Leone as an NRI. What do you think he brings to the table besides he's won a world championship with the Red Sox in 16?
Right. Well, I think the Marlins established on day one that they have full confidence in Jorge Alfaro as their catcher. He spent the whole offseason training, going back and forth between Miami and Jupiter instead of going home to see family in Colombia, working both on his hitting, but also especially his game calling, developing, I guess, rapport with the pitchers, something he said in the past he maybe had struggled with, kind of getting to know them or communicate properly. So I wouldn't say there's a competition there. It was a bunch of, like I had mentioned with, well, I don't know if I had with Eason, like it's a lost season for Alfaro. In spring training, he was hurt. Then, you know, he missed a month with COVID. It's hard to get going, especially in such an important position as catcher. As for, Sandy Leone, he brings obviously that World Series pedigree. It's a non-roster invite, so it'll be interesting to see how the spring progresses, if any injuries happen. But he, I think, was brought in to kind of nurture those young pitchers, especially those minor league ones that he'll probably see a lot of time in camp with. And that's one of those names to watch, like, because why else would you bring in a guy like that?
Right.
You know, he has an outside chance at making the team.
Yeah, he's going to push. He's going to push somebody.
Yeah, and even, like, you'd hope, you know, a guy like Alfaro or even, like, Will Banfield, who's one of the Marlins prospects, that they can learn from him. Sorry. I'm not used to talking this much anymore.
We'll let you go, but last question. What's that cool mask you have on?
It's Lady Gaga from Attica. Sorry.
Oh, that's her favorite. Yeah.
I knew I recognized
that and Harry
it.
Potter. I know her history.
That's awesome.
I know her history. Hey, so Christina, we hope to bring you back on as the season progresses. If people want to follow you on social media, I'm doing it, but tell the fans where they can follow you and keep up with what's going on with the Marlins.
Yeah, on Twitter, CDNicola, which is DENICOLA 13, because clearly, I guess, I grew up in Miami, so 13 was my favorite number.
Of course.
Dan Marino. Sorry again, goodness. I swear I haven't been coughing like this. But yeah, CDNicola 13. It's awesome. Wearing the mask for like 8 hours in the sun, you know?
No, right. I bet. Well,
I hope it wasn't the hard questions that we came at you with.
Yeah,
that.
I know, right?
Well, hopefully we'll see you on Sunday. Thank you so
yeah,
much. You're awesome.
Let's stay in touch and wish you the best of luck in your new job with MLB.com.
Yep. Thank you. Thanks for having me, guys.
You got it, Christina. Take care.
Thanks.
Awesome.
Yep. We'll see you on Sunday.
It's going to be awesome.
Yep.
Man, she is super knowledgeable about the game. She went to UM. She worked as an intern at MLB.com starting in 2011. And then was with Fox Sports Florida for a little while, but she was under the mentorship and tutelage of Joe Fusaro, who did that job for 20 years.
Yep.
And then when the pandemic happened, a lot of those guys that were close to retirement decided to take the early retirement. And fortunately for her, she's the one that got the advantage.
Awesome.
And the opportunity opened up, and I think she's great. I read every one of her stories.
Yeah, me too.
I watch every one of her tweets on Twitter and Instagram are awesome. So, yeah, man. That's a good way to start episode 8 of the Mainline Marlins podcast.
Sounds
anything
good.
Else we want to talk about? I got to give a shout out to two guys that are going with us tomorrow. Both Army guys, buddies of mine. David and Jim, I'm going to see them after the last show of the day down at the tavern. So give them a shout out for Sunday.
That's awesome. Yep. And I'm heading up with Mike Grabkowski and my mom.
Killer.
So we're going to be a wrecking crew heading up.
Yeah. We're going to fill all six seats. Exactly. It's going to be great. I can't wait.
See you then.
So that's it. Made my mom's.